big storm is coming, Doc.
I figure we should find a safe place for the night. Don't like all these damnable rats.
The Pied Piper. I know that poem.
Well, we could most certainly utilize his pest control talents around here.
I could kill them with my knives.
No, I think not. Better not to antagonize the pests. You might kill one and then find 1,000 come boiling out of some vast burrow beneath the ruins.
We had rats and no vanity. I absolutely deplore them.
Doc leaned on his sword stick.
I am too old for this sort of activity. Time was, my dearest Emily and I would...
He stopped, shaking his head, crystal tears tumbling from his rheumy eyes.
You'll be seeing your wife and children again, Doc. And I, my friends.
Yes. Yes, of course we will. I wish we had made better time and not wandered off our true path. If Ryan and the others get to the place of the Cronjump first...
Maybe we should keep moving through the
night. Why not? Excellent
idea. Doc slapped Michael heartily on the back.
Brother Michael, the confined monk with the unconfined mind.
At that moment, the first heavy drops of rain began to splatter around them, glittering in the dusk light like new minted coins.
Bienvenue, le déluge.
It'll be raining any minute.
Ryan looked around them. A feral cat, as skinny as a razor, was slinking along the front of a row of abandoned stores, its golden eyes shining in the gloom.
Think Doc and Michael are okay, lover?
Until you can spit in the eyes of the corpse, you better figure it's living.
One of traitors?
Ryan nodded.
Of course. I reckon they must be ahead of us. Could possibly reach the redoubt, but I don't think so. Moving fast over broken ground was never Doc's strongest card. And he's not so hot at navigating either.
Christy looked up at the black sky.
I'm seriously worried about Doc and Michael going to the Cronjump unit, Ryan. Got a bad feeling about it. Suppose they get there before us and try to go back to their own times.
Ryan looked at his life mate.
If they do, then they will. From what we know, the odds are huge against them. If they try it, I doubt we'll ever see them again.
The first spots of rain began to splatter around them.
We better look for cover.
Those doors.
JB pointed with the muzzle of the shotgun.
Be safe there for the night. Easy to defend.
Hope there's no ghouls inside.
The end sections of the row of a dozen stores had fallen in, leaving piles of wind-washed stone and rusting iron. Several more units had lost parts of their roofs and were already awash with flat pools of dark rainwater. Only the two in the center were still reasonably solid and weatherproof. All of them had lost their main windows 100 years earlier, but the pair in the middle had been boarded up. The names could still be made out, silhouetted against the stained concrete. One had been the FM Baby Emporium. The other had been called, mysteriously, Vinyl Days. The five friends were finally huddled inside, the rain teeming outside.
What do you think of that, Mildred?
Vinyl Days? Yeah, I can guess. You know that you told me you've seen occasionally music players that used a CD?
Ryan nodded.
Little discs, patterns like rainbows on them?
Right.
Mildred wiped rain off her plaited hair.
Well, before CDs came along, there were records. Ordinary discs 12 inches across of vinyl. A lot of people love them. But the big companies came along and said that they were phasing vinyl out, so everyone had to buy the CDs.
That's a double bummer. I heard Uncle Tyus McCann talk about it once. He got red in the face and big purple veins swelled in his forehead.
Well, it wasn't as bad as all that. There was DJ culture and hip-hop that kept vinyl alive, and there were music junkies who refused to give up their records. So specialty stores popped up. Vinyl never died, but it was never as popular as it had been before the CD.
That's dead boring, Mildred. Who cares about music? Not me.
You've obviously never heard Bob Marley, boy.
Who?
The doctor shook her head slowly and sadly.
You can't believe what it used to be like, kid. Music was big in the lives of young people. What do you have to replace it? Not books nor movies? All you have is keeping alive, keeping warm, keeping food in your belly, killing the other guy before he kills you. It's just not the same, Dean. By God, It's not anywhere near the same.
Doc and Michael had also holed up against the storm. They'd come across a small complex of business units, with one six-story office block still standing at its center. Every single window had vanished in the days of dark nights, but the center staircase was still secure, and the inner rooms were dry. It seemed perfect to Doc. If Ryan or JB had been there, they'd have pointed out that the building constituted a perfect trap. One set of stairs up and down. No rear exit. A single man proficient with a handgun could clear it out from basement to roof at virtually no risk to himself. Others had been there before them. The largest of the rooms had three stained and dusty mattresses lined neatly along one wall, and the dark remains of an ancient cooking fire sat in the middle of the floor. The old man lay on the nearest mattress.
I have the last of some jerky.
Plenty of water outside.
Michael squatted next to Doc, looking out across the corridor to where rain was pounding in through a broken casement. His bare feet, as hard as horn, were tucked comfortably beneath him. They rested in silence for several minutes, lulled by the hissing of water and the occasional distant roll of thunder. Doc broke the stillness between them.
You are sure you want to do this with me?
Yes.
I would not wish to pressure you or to draw skeins of wool over your eyes. This is immensely hazardous, and we may both die in the most unimaginably horrific manner.
I understand that.
Doc rolled onto his side and fixed the young man with a piercing glare.
You realize I am not talking of death. No man knows what happens during a Kron trawl, where the molecules of your body and soul fly to, and how they reform, or don't reform. If the process fails, you may not be here. Nor will you be back at Nilvanity, Michael. You will not be anywhere in the vast coldness of inner space. And you will be there for all of infinity.
It's worth the risk to get out of the Deathlands. I haven't seen a thing to make me want to stay here any longer.
Doc sat up.
Do not be deceived, brother. There is much good in this place. Much courage and honor and simple Christian values. If I were to pick the manner of my passing, I would not wish for anyone but Ryan and the others for company. They are truly heroic, Michael.
Yes, but I want out.
Think of being an incorporate entity throughout eternity, my dear boy. Do you have any understanding of eternity?
I guess not.
Michael lay back and closed his eyes, allowing the rich, sonorous voice to wash over him.
Imagine, my boy, a sphere of solid brass, highly polished, floating in the darkness. It is 1,000 miles in diameter, 1,000 miles across. You have that in your mind's eye?
Yes, I've got it.
Now, imagine a small white dove fluttering upward toward that sphere. It does this once every 100 years. It brushes the tip of a wing feather against the polished brass just once every century. Think of how long it would take to wear that immense ball of brass away to nothing. That, Michael, is an approximation of eternity.
Tanner looked across the gloomy room. The slender teenager was lying still, his hands folded on his chest, his breathing steady and regular. Doc watched him for some time, smiling gently. The old man's lips moved, and he whispered to himself in the dank darkness.
I'm coming, Emily. My darling love, soon now we'll be back together again. You and I and the dear little ones. The pain and suffering of our separation will be over.
The rain continued unabated until the streets were teeming rivers. Ryan decided that they might as well stay in the old record store for the night. If Doc had gone straight back to the redoubt, then they would be too late anyway. If he hadn't, then he and Michael would probably have holed up somewhere against the storm. The old man had never been too keen on getting himself wet. They'd finished off the last of the dried meat, washing it down with rainwater collected by Dean in a battered tin. Night sidled in from the tempest that was blowing itself hoarse all about them, darkening the store. JB scavenged around and found some dry wooden laths from under the cracked ceiling and kindled a small fire near the front door. so that most of the smoke drifted out into the starless blackness. There was a through draft from the back door, which hung askew on broken hinges.
We move at first light.
Guards?
The armorer was methodically field-stripping his weapons and